Hello and welcome to Still Buffering, a cross-generational guide to the culture that made us. I am Riley Smurl.
I'm Sydney McElroy.
And I'm Taylor Smurl.
Hey, you all seen that JoJo Siwa flick yet?
No.
I have not.
You haven't?
I have not.
Are we missing out?
I'm going to be completely honest with you. Yes.
Really?
It's obviously not aimed at adults.
Because I saw the preview for it, like a little teaser. And I was like, this seems like something Charlie would enjoy.
So we have already watched it. Charlie and Cooper. I don't know which one enjoyed it more, frankly.
Really?
Cooper danced through the entire movie. Like, stood there dancing and trying to do the moves. There's a move that JoJo invents in it called the JoJo Jam.
Uh-huh.
And Cooper was determined that by the end of the film, she would be doing the JoJo Jam.
Can she do it?
Sort of.
No.
What is this? Is this like the origin story of JoJo Siwa? Is this based on fact, or what's the narrative?
So I don't know if it's based on any fact, because I don't know. I did not watch Dance Moms enough to know the life story of JoJo Siwa.
You don't know the JoJo Siwa lore.
I
know
when
she's from Omaha.
When she was on Abby Lee's ultimate dance competition to be on Dance Moms. She lost, but then she was on Dance Moms anyways.
You might know more than I do. The only thing I know, Charlie and Cooper have watched this movie that's like autobiographical, I think, because they both always want to go to Omaha because they know she's from Omaha. So I know. They're constantly saying, like, can we either go to Disney World or Omaha? One of the two.
Because like, obviously the same. If you go there, you'll just meet JoJo.
That's what they think.
Yeah.
We can go to Omaha and meet JoJo. JoJo says it's great. I don't know what that whole... I know she was on Dance Moms. I know that the instructor was not very nice.
No.
Was not, like, a great person, it sounds like.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if part of... Like, that's not explicit, but I wondered because I kind of vaguely knew that. Because the general idea is JoJo is, you know, JoJo, sparkly, bows, the whole thing, personality for days. And she is on a dance team, and their instructor is all like, be yourself, love yourself, everything's great, and it's wonderful. And then the instructor retires, and a new instructor is brought in for the dance school. And she's like, everybody wear gray, no bows, no sparkles, and... like kind of a good creates like a good dance team, but they're very homogenized, right? Like everybody, no standouts,
no which is, bows.
There's like a scene where she's like, no, like they slow it down in slow motion, like, and no bows. JoJo's like, no. So like they get it, like it's self-aware.
Yeah.
But so JoJo tries to, like, you know, hide her shine.
Mm-hmm.
Can't do it.
Mm-hmm.
Can't help it. She's too sparkly. Gets kicked off the team. Makes her own dance team.
Right. The J team.
The J team.
Of course.
And they go to the big dance competition to see who's going to win. The J team or her old dance team.
Does the J team win?
The P pack.
The P pack?
Yes.
Wait, what?
Hold on.
That's the old dance team becomes a, because the new dance instructor, I forget what her name is, Pauline, starts with P.
P-Pack is such a bad name.
Yes, so the P-Pack and the J team face off, and I mean, I don't want to spoil it.
Who
but
wins?
It is a kids movie, so you can probably piece together what happens.
The J team loses, mm-hmm. And there's a nuanced lesson about how self-expression is more important than winning or losing. No, they win.
No.
Okay.
It is, I mean, like, I will say that as much as they make it look like it's about sparkles and bows, there is a lot of, like, no matter what the world tells you, be yourself. Don't be afraid if people don't like you for being different or looking different or acting different.
So it's a little, you know.
Yeah. Well, I'm gay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes, I think, I mean, obviously none of that is, like, no one has any sorts of relationships in there.
Yeah.
But, I mean, JoJo is wearing double denim quite a bit, so I'm just going to say that. And, of course, JoJo Siwa is not the character, but, like, the human JoJo Siwa is not straight.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if we know more than that. She's not straight. I know she has a girlfriend.
Yes.
But I don't know her. I don't know her actual. Now, I don't know if she defined her sexuality. I know she's not straight.
Is this the movie that I read an article about how her character was supposed to kiss a boy and she said that would be untrue to who I am and to all my fans that have watched me like come out and grow and I'm not going to do that. So she didn't. They took that out of the movie.
If that was part of it, I cannot fathom who that boy was supposed to
there
be.
There's another movie she's also in.
Because there are boys on the dance team that she creates. Like the original dance team is all girls. Mm-hmm. The dance team, the J team, has boys and girls. Because she actually recruits them from the park, from people like, there's like people playing soccer and she recruits some people. There's people playing baseball and she recruits some people. There's like basketball. There's some like a dance team there and she steals some of them. I don't know. But she like goes to the park and recruits a bunch of people and then brings them back to her house. And it's like, you're a dance team now. And they're like, OK, sure. I got nothing going on.
And they're great.
And they're great. So there are boys on there, but none of them are like, they're all kind of equally like they have names. They each have a few lines, but nobody is elevated to, you know what I mean?
No love interest.
No love interest, certainly, among any of them, any gender. And then the only other like prominent male character is somebody who we're supposed to believe used to be in JoJo's dance studio and then moved. And so now he shows up at the competition and she gets to see him because like he's on one of the other dance teams. And he is very clearly supposed to be gay. Mm-hmm. Like everything about this character is queer coded. Mm-hmm. So I mean, they don't say that, but
yeah.
That it, you know, it seems very much like, again, none of this is explicit, but watching the movie, you would assume this character is gay and JoJo, it is a question mark.
Hmm.
She never expresses any sorts of.
Interesting. Well, it's all about the dance.
Yeah. It's about the dance.
Yeah.
Well, and it's about herself. It's really about being herself and self-expression and being true to who you are and not having to hide who you are. And which is very cool because, like I said, JoJo is, I don't know if she is. Has she said she's a lesbian or is she?
She wore that shirt in that picture that her family got her that said best gay cousin ever.
Mm-hmm.
That's the only time I think I've ever seen her use any sort of.
I always hate to assume
label.
Because being bi, I always hate to assume that because someone is, you know, she's dating a woman, assume that she is a lesbian, although mm-hmm. she may be. And that's fine. You know, I don't know. Yeah. I just always hate to make assumptions about people. Mm-hmm. You shouldn't.
Not straight.
But either way,
that works.
Not straight.
Not straight. Yeah. That's what she's not straight. But like she does this. There's this moment where she is very clearly like channeling Elton John,
mm-hmm.
like full like sequins all over the face, like glued to the face, and big giant costume playing the piano before she dances, and it's pretty fantastic. Like especially as a parent to see this in a kids movie. Now thinking about what we got and what my kids get. It's pretty fantastic.
Yeah. Well, that sounds cool. I would probably watch that. That feels like a movie that could take me away from the world for a little while.
It does. I mean, and some of JoJo's songs are pretty good.
Are they bops?
Some of them are bops.
Are they in the movie, like her songs?
There's only one that I recognize from like what the girls listen to. The rest felt like new.
Okay.
Specific to the plot mm-hmm. kind of songs, like moving the plot along, musical type numbers. The dancing is great, of course. All these people are super talented. And that she does one like slow sort of lyrical piece that she does like lyrical dancing to and sings. And I mean, it's really pretty. It is enjoyable. I enjoyed watching it. It's fluffy. It's fun. It's got a positive message.
I love that DREAM.
Yeah.
DREAM. That gets stuck in my head a lot.
The girls sing that a lot.
I'll have to check that out.
So I did check. Apparently, JoJo has come out and said that she likes the term queer, but that she supposes she's technically pansexual. So,
okay. Well, there you go.
I like that I feel the same about my identity as JoJo Siwa. I like that I, too, just go, hey, queer.
I think it's very cool. Like that it is not about that, but that is easily part of the message you could get, which is if you are watching and you're a young person and you're also not straight and you're not sure how to talk about that or if that's okay or whatever, you could easily see the messages from this being that's totally fine.
Mm-hmm.
You are fine the way you are. So
that's good.
There is a lot of hating on the color gray, I will say, and as a big fan of the color gray.
How? I have never understood how someone can be a big fan of the color gray. That's like saying, like, your favorite drink is water. Like, it's just meh.
Like, I just
and
like
not even,
dry,
like, any kind of fancy
toast.
Water. Yeah. On it. Just, like, room temperature tap water.
My favorite color is purple, but my second favorite color is gray because it's the most comforting of colors. It's warm and soft. Elephants are gray, and they're great. I love gray.
It's a weird... that's a weird... little add-on reason there. Also elephants, you know.
Also elephants.
I love elephants.
Yeah, but hippos are gray too, and they're terrifying. So I don't know. They cancel each other out.
Dolphins are gray, and a dolphin traumatized your child.
A child did get bitten by a dolphin once. I mean, gorillas are the best animal, but elephants are close. Anyway, well, we're not here to rank animals.
Okay.
Can we?
You know, that's not fair that you end the conversation after declaring gorillas the king of the animals. And you're like, and we're done. But all right.
I don't think I knew this about you, Cindy, that you were like gorillas. Yes, the best animal.
I love gorillas.
Wow.
Since when?
Well, yeah.
I've never heard you say this about gorillas before.
Midlife gorilla like fascination. This has not been part of knowing you.
Okay, I want to talk about Shel Silverstein, yeah. But really fast, I will just say, one time, I was at a faculty retreat. This is for adults, like a faculty retreat, as a doctor and teacher. And we were at the zoo. It was a faculty retreat at the Cincinnati Zoo. And we were all assigned the task of wandering about the zoo and finding the animal with which you most identify. And then they put each animal up on the screen, and we all had to guess who said they most identify with that animal.
That seems like a good icebreaker activity.
Mm-hmm.
And you went with gorilla?
Well, it was in that moment, as I was looking at the animals, that I felt like you always see, like, the mommy gorillas with their babies, and, like, they're always, I felt this, I mean, and obviously, like, we share a great amount of DNA, so this is obvious, but like I was watching this mommy hold her baby, and she looked both like adoring and then just so exhausted and over it, which is like a feeling I feel a lot, where I'm like, I love you so much, but also I'm so tired. And it just I looked in this gorilla's eyes, and I felt like, I know, I get it, we're the same, you and me. Anyway, I love gorillas.
I feel bad. This obviously is an important part of your personality that I knew nothing about.
I don't know how important it is. I just love gorillas. I also love Shel Silverstein.
Are there any Shel Silverstein poems about gorillas? I can't think of any.
Not that I can think of. So Shel Silverstein, in case you're not, I feel like if you are of, I mean, Riley,
even
do you
me,
feel
I
like...
I grew up reading Shel Silverstein, which, okay, I have to say, there are lots of things I assume everyone of my generation has also been exposed to, but I've realized over time, this is not because it was popular when I was growing up, it's because it was something that you all enjoyed that I just inherited.
Mm-hmm.
So this may not have been a universal experience for all of like the older levels of Gen Z. This may just be because I had your all's old books and stuff.
I don't know. I mean, Justin was certainly familiar with Shel Silverstein, not to the extent that we were, but like, so Shel Silverstein was a poet. A writer, wrote songs, poems, stories, born in 1930. And a lot of us, I think, who were children a long time ago, became familiar because of his poetry. I'm trying to think of when all these books were published, because they just seem like eternal to me. But
from what I can tell, mostly the 60s.
So he did the two that I remembered the best were Where the Sidewalk Ends and A Light On in the Attic.
80s and 90s.
Or A Light in the Attic. And then I also, of course, he did the ones like The Missing Piece and all those.
He did The Giving Tree.
The Giving Tree.
Which was one of those books that was like, I feel like, eternal in every elementary school classroom.
And then there were... lots of other ones. Uncle Shelby's ABC book was the other one that I that I was a big fan of. And there were a lot of others. He recorded songs. He was really famous. Like, this was not how I knew of him, certainly. But he did A Boy Named Sue.
Yeah.
Which won a Grammy in 1970. So, like, really famous for that. He was nominated for an Academy Award and a Golden Globe. So, very famous and well-known in a lot of circles for some of the stuff he did. For me, the poetry is where he came into my life. And not only reading the poems, but we had the cassette tapes of him reading his poems aloud, which I listened to, oh, I couldn't tell you how many times. And luckily, you can find all those on YouTube still, the recordings of him reading them aloud. And they're just, I mean, they add this whole other level to the poems. And now the ones that he does perform on the tape, I can't, when I read them from the book, I can't not hear him, like, the way he read them, his rhythm to them, and sometimes singing parts of them and adding a couple words in here and there. Some of them I completely misremember because of I remember the recording better than the poem itself. But anyway, so hugely important to me as a kid. Part of the reason I started to love reading were Mama and Papa showing us these books at their house, introducing us to these poems, and me becoming obsessed with learning to read every single one in the book. And really got me into poetry for a long time. Like, I read a ton of poetry because I thought poems are cool. Poems are funny.
And you started writing under the name Lenore.
Yes, I did do that for a while.
All because of Shel Silverstein.
Also some wild illustrations in there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Definitely, like I was, when I was looking back through, those are probably the same books, like Where the Sidewalk Ends and Light in the Attic are the ones that I remember the most, but also the ABC book. Like, some of those illustrations are stuck in my head the same way that, like, the scary stories, those creepy illustrations are just stuck in my head. Not in quite as terrifying a way, although some of his drawings were kind of disturbing.
They were. Like,
That was definitely, I love the poetry, but the illustrations really made an impact on me as a kid. Like, just some of the weird, like the one poem about the people from Mars who have, like, they're just like us, but their heads are in different places, and it's the headless body with its head on its butt. Like, that always disturbed the crap out of me as a kid, but I liked it.
Some of them I just thought were so cool in their intricacy. The homework machine always sticks out to me, because the joke of the homework machine, if you look at the artwork, is that it is a kid stuck inside this big giant machine who's just doing your homework for you. But the illustration of that really always stuck with me.
I remember very specifically reading, I want to say Where the Sidewalk Ends was the one that I read the most. Reading it so many times, I knew in what order all the poems were, and there being pages that I would just kind of like turn my head away and close my eyes because the illustrations freaked me out so much. I would just skip by them so I didn't have to look at them again. And I don't know if that one with the people from Mars was in that book or if it was in the other one, but I remembered that one, like, to this day. I can picture that in my head and seeing it as a kid and freaking out, like, no, I don't want to read that one. I like the one with the kids in the tub. I want to see, let me see all the kids in the tub again. That was funny. That one's lighthearted. That was wholesome.
I did a, when I was in elementary school, one time we had to make dioramas, and I made a diorama of that poem, Too Many Kids in This Tub.
Really?
Yeah, because you remember those little toys, Quints?
Yeah.
That predates you, Riley. Yeah, there were these. It was just for a while that, like, of the little doll Barbie-esque like things you could buy were this collection of little babies, and they were quintuplets. Mm-hmm. They were quints, and they had like their numbers on their butts. I don't know why, but they were very popular for like 5 minutes in the grand scheme. But anyway, we had them. And so I got a Barbie bathtub and put all the quints in it and then filled it with, like, foam so it would look like bubbles and made a bathroom scene and put it in there. And it was to Shel Silverstein's Too Many Kids in This Tub.
Is that still part of like, education where occasionally you just have to make a diorama? Like, I don't know what that was teaching us exactly, but I always enjoyed that.
I don't know, but I hope so.
So you can make one again?
Yeah.
Yeah, I really enjoyed. I made one of the Old Man and the Sea once in high school, and I had to make like a big giant fish, like partial skeleton for the side of the. Anyway, I really enjoyed that.
I remember doing 1984 and making like a diorama of like what the like the main character Winston, is that right? What his room looked like, and then also making like the pyramids, like, you know, the big like the Bureau of all of that, like making the kind of.
I remember
design.
This.
I got. Yeah. I think I made like I was. I think the assignment was one diorama, and I made like three visual props. I was like, I don't know if I make enough visuals, I don't have to talk about it, right?
That was a really great one. I still remember that one.
Really
into it. That one beat the thing I was most proud of is one time in school I had to build a pueblo, and it was this. I made this huge thing with like shoe boxes all wrapped in brown paper, and I was so proud at the end of it of all my little buildings and like my doors and windows and all this. But that beat my pueblo.
a lot of good dioramas back in the day. I hope kids are still making dioramas.
if my kids do, I'm gonna really push this too many kids in this tub idea, because it was a very easy one to make. And the kids in class, which in retrospect I have to think the teacher didn't love that choice, because yeah. The last line is, I just washed a behind that I'm sure wasn't mine. There's too many kids in this tub. And I had to read that aloud to the class. This is at Catholic school. This was our brief stint in Catholic school too. Yeah. I'm talking about behinds. There was no way they loved that.
Have we reached the point in the general psyche that if Charlie were to bring that poem into class, kids would be like, huh? What? But who?
Maybe.
I feel like at least that one and several other Shel Silverstein poems, even for me, it was like, oh, I know what you're talking about. We're on the same page. That's 5-year-olds.
There were definitely ones like that, because there was like... That one had stuck out to me when I was young. Mrs. McTwitter, the babysitter. Mm-hmm. A lot of people connected to. So, like, the ones that I feel like when I talk to somebody who wasn't a super fan, the Sarah Cynthia Sylvia Stout Will Not Take the Garbage Out. That one stuck with a lot of people. Yeah. And Sick, I Cannot Go to School Today, said little Peggy Ann McKay. That one. Those a lot of people remember as like prominent poems. So I think they like made a bigger impression in the cultural zeitgeist. But I think for the most part, this like intricate love of all the Shel Silverstein poems, I don't know that everybody had that. And certainly fair. I am now raising my children with it. They have both. Charlie reads the poems on her own now, and I still continue to read them to Cooper. Mm-hmm. And they'll recite them too sometimes, which is fun.
That's good.
Have you you used to taunt me with Sister for Sale. That was your favorite. Which is now in retrospect, what a specifically like Sydney thing to do. I am going to recite a poem at you when I'm upset at you.
That is exactly the form of torment that I would be drawn to.
That's like I'm going to recite Sister for Sale. That's a threat.
It's so good because that's what Charlie would do too. Oh, Charlie is just so much like you. She would never be outwardly mean to anyone, but she would do that.
She does do Sister for Sale now. And it's what's great inherited. Is that I read it to them in the intonation of Shel Silverstein on the tape, and then now Charlie recites it in that way.
That's great.
Because he adds lines on the tape, and the first time she read it herself, she looked at me and said, "It's not the way you say it." And I was like, oh, no, you're right. The last thing he says on the tape isn't in the poem itself as written. So,
oh,
yeah, I know. That really threw me, too, because it was really like, I don't know. I remember different versions anyway.
Yeah.
I want to talk more about what these mean to me and what they continue to mean, I think, to people who love them. But first,
let's check the group message.
So I am getting hungry.
Me too.
I haven't had, it's not lunchtime. I was about to say I haven't had lunch yet. It's not actually lunchtime.
Not lunchtime yet.
No, but I'm just hungry.
Yeah, me too.
And I'm not going to want to cook anything. No way. But how can I get delicious food from some of my favorite local restaurants delivered straight to my door without too much hassle.
How?
DoorDash. So all you got to do, it's super easy. We use DoorDash constantly when we just can't be bothered to cook. And right now, we're not going out to restaurants nearly as much as we used to, but we still have a lot of local places that we love and we want to continue to support and eat their great food. And DoorDash has you covered because all you got to do is get the app, you open it up, you choose where you want to eat from, you put in your order, and the food is delivered safely to your door. It's contact-free delivery. They leave it right outside. They let you know. You get updates while they're coming, and they give you a nice little message when they show up to say, here's your food, and don't worry. It's all safe and sound right there, and you can come get it. And any local place you like, any restaurant in your area, you can just check out the DoorDash app and order what you need. If you need something from like a convenience store or something that isn't necessarily like a restaurant meal, but you need snacks or toiletries, sundries, whatever, they can bring those to you, too. And it's super easy, and I'd highly recommend it. So, Taylor, if our listeners want to use DoorDash, what should they do?
Well, right now, our listeners can get $5 off their first order of $15 or more and zero delivery fees for their first month when you download the DoorDash app and enter code BUFFERING. That's $5 off your first order and zero delivery fees for a month when you download the DoorDash app in the App Store and enter code BUFFERING.
So, when I am in ordering from DoorDash, you know, maybe I don't have time. It's usually because I have too much going on to cook myself food. And also sometimes just because I want some yummy food out. Usually it's because I have too much going on. Whether it's stuff I'm really excited about, maybe a night in, maybe hanging out with my friends, or stuff I'd rather not think about, like all of my school projects now I have to do. Maybe my capstone project to get a degree. I can't always control the vibes going on, but I can control the vibes in my ears.
How?
With Raycon. I'm so glad you asked. Whether I'm studying and I need some lo-fi study beats going on in the background while I'm trying to get some homework done, or I'm working out and I need something upbeat, maybe I'm, I don't know, walking between classes, I need something to chill me out, Raycon is there for me whenever I need something in my ears to help me control the vibes going on for even a brief moment. And the new everyday earbuds look, feel, and sound better than ever. They have an improved look and feel and optimized gel tips for the perfect in-ear fit. They're impressive before you even start listening. You don't have to worry about them falling out. I know when I'm like running on the treadmill, sometimes I don't want to have to worry about them falling out and having to stop, bend down, pick them up. It's also just like an embarrassing vibe. Like, oh man, now I gotta bend down off the treadmill. What if I fall? There's a lot to think about there. You don't have to worry about that with Raycon. And you get three new sound profiles to make sure everything you're listening to sounds its best. There's pure mode, maybe best for some podcast listening, blues, instrumental, balanced mode, which maybe if you listen to some rock music, heavy metal, also some podcasts, and bass mode for hip hop, EDM, reggae, all those kinds of musics. So they really got you covered for whatever you're into. So, Tay, if our listeners want to check out Raycon, what should they do?
Well, right now, Still Buffering listeners can get 15% off their Raycon order at buyraycon.com/buffering. That's buyraycon.com/buffering to save 15% on Raycons. buyraycon.com/buffering.
So, you know, things that can be stressful have been lately, as you mentioned, Riley. You know, we're having to stay in more again, and things can be really tense, and all of that can stink.
Yep.
But even if the world is stinky, you don't have to be. Don't be stinky. Especially, maybe you're hanging out at home with, like, your family and your pod, and you don't want to be stinky because, like, don't inflict that on other people.
Are you trying to say something about me sitting here right now, hanging out with my family in my pod?
I'm saying, why don't you try my native deodorant?
Okay.
I am just subtly suggesting that you try my native deodorant. And you may have, too, already tried out native deodorant and love it for how wonderful it smells and how much less stinky you have become. But you should also try out their other products. They've got body wash. They've got toothpaste. They've got sunscreen. Broad spectrum SPF 30 sunscreen. It's lightweight. It absorbs quickly. They've got coconut and pineapple scent and unscented if you prefer unscented. And I do many times prefer unscented products these days. A lot of scented products make me sneeze and unscented products don't like native. And so you have that option if you are like me. If you'd like to smell like a tropical vacation.
I would love to.
Then there you go. You got that too. You can get deodorant, body wash, and amazing scents like coconut and vanilla, citrus and herbal musk, lavender and rose. There are more than that. And you can smell good and feel good about what you're putting on your body. So, Taylor, if our listeners want to check out Native and get less stinky, what should they do?
Well, stay fresh, stay clean with Native by going to nativedeo.com/buffering or use promo code buffering at checkout and get 20% off your first order. That's nativedeo.com/buffering or use promo code buffering at checkout for 20% off your first order.
So as I was preparing for this episode, I was reading about, like, I realized, and this is something that makes it really clear where this fits into my life. I knew very little about Shel Silverstein, the person,
mm-hmm.
Because when you are, you know, 10 and reading poems, you're not really thinking, I wonder what this author is all about. Where was he born? What's his story? But I did learn as I was reading that he used to hang out at the Playboy Mansion because he used to do like cartoons for Playboy magazine a lot.
Oh, I had no idea.
I know. It's very different when you consider I thought of him as the author of children's poetry, which he was way more than that. Right. That was just who he was to me as a child. But like he did way more than that. I know.
Interesting.
And I will say that like one of the things I really appreciate in this kind of like he did the poetry that was clearly fun and light and lighthearted and easily accessible for children. But then there were some more subversive things like Uncle Shelby's ABZ book.
That
which
we had that as young kids. And we're fine, but like that there was some wild stuff in there.
There was so Uncle Shelby's ABZ book was supposed to be like a send up if you've never read it. Because I would say it did not rise to the level of fame that these poetry books did, or that like certainly The Giving Tree or anything like that. But it was supposed to be like based on a kid's ABC book, except every letter is sort of like suggesting something not so great. It's kind of like funny and sarcastic. And like, for instance, some of them are kind of just ways to mess with the parents. I remember E is for Ernie. Mm-hmm. Ernie is the genie that lives in your ceiling. E is also for egg, and Ernie loves eggs. So the next time you're in your living room, you should throw an egg at the ceiling and yell, "Hey, Ernie, catch," and Ernie will reach down from the ceiling and catch the egg.
I don't remember this one.
The one that always stuck with me was the S is also for Stanley, the crazy murderer who likes to murder little boys and girls early Sunday morning.
Yep.
What?
Yep.
Yeah, and it's this picture of this guy holding a bloody knife, which the knife is labeled like blood. It's great. But I just used to stare at that page, and like as a small child, like, well, it's not Sunday, so I'm good. I'm good tonight.
There's also one that's like, is that S is for scissors or is it H is for haircut?
Oh, well, there's the one that the daddy one. Is that the one you're thinking of?
Like, yeah.
Dad needs a haircut.
I forget which letter it's in, but look at Daddy needs a haircut.
Yeah.
Is it Daddy? Look at Daddy. Daddy needs a haircut. Daddy can't afford a haircut because he spends all his money buying new toys and oatmeal.
I remember that, toys and oatmeal.
And they're like, poor Daddy. See Daddy sleeping on the couch? Poor, poor Daddy. See the scissors? Poor, 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 poor Daddy.
Great.
I still remember that one.
Well, and the one that everybody was, I guess, most upset about is the L. L is for lie. And it's also L is for lollipops, but also L is for lie. And it's like, if you want a nice lollipop, just pour the lie out and tell your mommy and daddy that you've eaten the lie. And then you'll get taken to the doctor and your stomach will be pumped. And then you'll get a nice red lollipop.
I know.
Like this, it was, we read this. I mean, we're 7, 8, young.
So it's hard because it was clearly not for kids, right? Like it's
but
aimed
also
at adults.
Shel Silverstein. So
and you, if you looked at it, you wouldn't know immediately that it wasn't for kids. Now when you read it, you do. But I think like nowadays it would be more commonplace because you have books like that. You know that Go the F to Sleep.
Yeah.
Have you seen that series? So like there are those books which look like kids' books. But then as soon as you're like, oh, no, OK, obviously this is more of a joke for grownups.
Yeah.
not for kids. And that is where Uncle Shelby's ABC book lives, in that space. It just, it was kind of, I don't think there was a lot out there like that yet. And so our parents just bought it for us.
I'm just trying to figure out what took place between you all reading it and me, where mom and dad at some point, I guess, realized like, oh, no, she shouldn't. This isn't for kids.
It is not.
I did not read that. I don't remember any of that. I remember Where the Sidewalk Ends. I remember A Light in the Attic, The Giving Tree, all the other stuff. I do not remember that at all.
Oh, he does the classic, like, M is for money. Money is the root of all evil. Money is what makes mommy and daddy fight. So you should take all the money in your house and mail it to. And then he puts an address that's, you know, supposed to be his.
Yeah.
Or there was R is for red, but it's like the fire engine is red and the fireman's hat. And then it ends with like, oh, but the fireman only goes to places where there is a fire. Like, do you want to see the fireman?
I know.
They're so all bad. Like that. It's so good, though. I love it. Like,
it's hilarious.
Cooper would love it.
Yeah. Yes. And for I think as long as you know what it is, it's funny for adults. Obviously, for kids, it's not. It's well, I mean, you just
but you know, the weird thing is, I remember reading it definitely as a young child and thinking it was funny. Like I yes. got the jokes as a very small person. I mean, I'm not saying this is. The kids should read this, but I also don't think it was damaging, the fact that we did.
No, I don't think, I mean, there was no chance that I was going to go, like, try to feed the pony in daddy's gas tank, yeah. as they suggest. P is for pony. So pour sugar in daddy's gas tank to feed the pony.
Like, I feel like a lot of this is just our family's sense of humor in a lot of ways.
Well,
it's like childish, kind of dark. Like,
yeah. Yeah, no, I did, but I really think it was because, like, I'd read all those Shel Silverstein books, and I loved those poetry books, so of course I was going to read this too. And I mean, the ones that, like, resonate with me and stick with me to today are definitely more the poems, mm-hmm. and those are I have not shared Uncle Shelby's ABZ book with my children. I do have it.
Yet.
I will eventually. but I have read many of the poems to them. They are easily impressed because they're kids, and so they are very impressed that I have memorized any of them, so I can show off that I know a poem, and then they both look at me like, wow, my God, my mom is just the best. It's like, that's right, I know all of The Crocodile Went to the Dentist. Every single word. They are disappointed, though, that I had not memorized The King and the Peanut Butter Sandwich.
Oh. Mm-hmm. That one, just like the way that Shel Silverstein reads that one, and the way that he uses his voice to sound like he's got a mouthful of peanut butter, like, mm-hmm. it's so good.
Have you listened to these?
I don't think I have.
Oh.
I'm going to have to play these for you. They're all on YouTube. Yeah. There's on compilations YouTube, yeah. of them on YouTube.
Say, yeah. I don't think I ever actually had if they were tapes.
Right. They were, I mean, I had the cassette tapes. I played on my little cassette player in my room by myself, like, sit there. Or Tay was probably hanging out with me listening to Shel Silverstein. Yeah.
I was right at a point where I still watched VHS tapes, but did not, I had no tapes. So maybe they were gone. Maybe they're yours. I don't know.
I think this was also a common thing on road trips for us, too. Like, mm-hmm. back in the day, that you put in the whole Shel Silverstein tape on a road trip. Mom and dad would just listen to it with us.
That was true. We would in the car all be listening to Shel Silverstein.
So funny.
Sister for Sale. He really is. I mean, obviously he was also a performer, and so it makes sense. But like, he's so vocally talented mm-hmm. with the way that he interprets mm-hmm. the poems to bring them to life. It's a whole other level. It's a different experience listening to him than reading it.
Yeah.
And it was also, it was a great way to memorize them, because, like, the reason that I knew The Crocodile Went to the Dentist, and to this day can still recite it, is because he does it in, like, a sing-songy way.
Mm.
And it became musical. And,
yeah.
And then some of them are more serious. There's the Little Boy and the Old Man. Do you remember that one?
Vaguely?
The Little Boy and the Old Man are commiserating about, like, sometimes I drop my spoon. Oh, sometimes I wet my pants.
Yes, yes.
And sometimes people don't pay attention to me. I'm gonna cry if yeah. I finish it, so I can't. But
yeah, there were a lot of them that I think were, you know, that they weren't inappropriate for kids to read, but I feel like they were reaching at something that maybe was a little outside of what, I don't know. I don't want to sell kids short. I think kids can get it, but adults, I think, are more affected by it.
Yeah. I wonder, I was looking at when all these books came out, because I was curious how long they were around before I was around. The Giving Tree was one of the first. That was in like the 60s, like 64, I think, was when that was published. But all the most popular poetry books weren't until like the late 80s to early 90s even.
Mm-hmm.
And it makes me wonder if that kind of poetry is something he just always did and didn't really compile and put together until like way later in his life, because he was born in 1930.
Mm-hmm.
Or if like he did all that more adult stuff and then like writing for, you know, Playboy or whatever. And then was like, you know what? Actually, that one kid's book I did, that would like went pretty well. Let's do that again. That was fun.
Well, I think that's how his career kind of went, right? Like, because he did all the Playboy mm-hmm. stuff first, and then he had people in his life that urged him to get into children's books. Because, I mean, maybe yeah. he had a lot of this stuff already, but like, that was sort of a... Because I guess there were some people that were like, oh, this man that illustrated for Playboy is writing books for children. That's bad, right? It's like, oh, you know.
No, I think you're very much right, and it is funny that, I mean, there are a lot of people, especially who kind of are in the comedy world, who ended up mm-hmm. I always think of like Bob Saget going from yeah. telling the dirtiest of dirty jokes and stand-up acts to being America's dad
yeah
on Full House. But there really is this in the poems are a lot less cynical most of the time, you know, a lot less with that sort of edge to them. Mm-hmm. Some of them do, but for the most part, they're kind of full of wonder and like the puzzle piece one, where they just talk about, I see a puzzle piece on mm-hmm. the sidewalk, all the things that one puzzle yeah. piece could be.
Mm-hmm.
The poem where the sidewalk ends is like that. Mm-hmm. The idea of the place where the sidewalk ends and what's there. I don't know. I think a lot of those poems are really nice for kids because they are more sort of these like metaphorical representations of creativity and imagination and like the wonder that you have as a kid, personified in different ways.
Mm-hmm.
There was one. I don't think maybe this is one, because I know there were more recent poetry books, but maybe I just missed this one. Do you remember Masks, Sid?
Yeah.
See, that's what I didn't remember that from childhood. And when I was just, you know, rereading everything, like I came across that one on the internet and it like caught me. So like that she had blue skin and so did he. He kept it hid and so did she. They searched for blue their whole life through, then passed right by and never knew. Like, that broke my heart.
There was some really, I mean, yeah, there's some really intense, beautiful things that are hidden in there among some of the sillier ones, yeah. you know. And then they, like, later on, they did things like Runny Babbitt Returns Runny Babbitt and Runny Babbitt Returns, which were, like, they were published after he had died based on things. I don't know. Like, uh-huh. they were based on things he had written or, like, completely things he had written.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't know. So some stuff was published because he passed away in 1999. Right. So some stuff was published later. But yeah, I think a lot of people just remember The Giving Tree as the, which, you know, is a lovely story.
I was surprised to see how much thought has gone into whether or not The Giving Tree is a good lesson or not. Like, there are people that have written yeah. very big think pieces about how it's teaches toxic relationships or it's misogynist somehow because it's a supposed woman tree giving everything to a boy. I don't remember it that way. Like, I remember it just being a good sort of parable on, like, you know, I don't, I felt like it was like about appreciating the people that take care of you, that sometimes we just don't really do that until it's, you know, we're older. Mm-hmm. But I'm curious how y'all feel about that.
I remember that book there at my elementary school. There was like along the top of the walls, there were books painted, like little like vignettes from them and their titles that were like all the most popular kids' books. Like the Rainbow Fish and all those like other mm-hmm. kids books that were super popular, like the Hungry Hungry Caterpillar. And that one was the very first one as soon as you walked in. And it had, like, this whole big painting of, like, the whole big tree going up one wall and the kid standing at the top. And I just remember thinking that book was, like, the best book. I was like, that's, like, the book. I'm going to read it, like, every... I did. I read it at school probably on a weekly basis. I haven't read it in a very long time, I will say.
I mean, I can understand. I have read that sort of critique of it, too. That, like, the idea, especially if you look at it as a mother and son, which is, I'm not saying that's exactly what it mm-hmm. is, but it feels that way. Mm-hmm. It you could definitely interpret, like, well, why does she have to sacrifice her entire self to take care of her son? And I think that that is sort of the, like, reading that people are saying, well, this is an outdated way of looking at raising a child. And then because it is a mom and a son, like, it does have that sort of sexist vibe. Mm. I don't know, as a parent, I think for me it's like it's not quite that. It doesn't bother me in that way.
Yeah.
You do change yourself. You do make changes to yourself and alterations and sacrifices when you decide to care for another human, mm-hmm. whatever that relationship is. You have to. That's part of, and especially if, like, it's a relationship where you're a caregiver. There are things you do to take care of that person. And I think the only thing, I don't know that it's well reflected because it's a tree, is the joy and happiness that it can bring mm-hmm. to, you know, sort of rearrange your life to care for another person and then have a whole new life that is born of the two of your relationship. That can be a really beautiful thing. It doesn't have to be a damaging thing, but I think because at the end the tree is, like, literally cut down,
yeah,
it's not as well. I don't know. It never occurred to me that it was that bad until I read those sorts of recent think pieces about it.
It's interesting because it seems to imply that if a book is written for kids, it has to have some sort of moral lesson at its core. But it's mm-hmm. like, if you just look at it, like, well, as adults, we read stories that sometimes are complex and are just stories about life, and they're not trying to teach you anything. They're just trying to tell a story. It's like, I don't know. I mean, does there have to? I think there's a takeaway if you see one there, but also can there just be a story without some sort of heavy-handed moral lesson? It's a beautiful story about the relationship between this tree and this boy, and it's a little sad mm-hmm. and it's a little sweet, and you know, you. Maybe it's okay that it doesn't have a bow on it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I mean, and you can talk about that. I think if that concerns you, I think it's a good thing to discuss. Like, that should the boy have appreciated the tree more all along? Could mm-hmm. the boy have given back to the tree more? I mean, I think you can have that conversation from the book. It doesn't have to be perfect. But the fact that it elicits all that conversation, I think, is kind of important all of it all on its own.
Yeah. Yeah,
but I mean, I understand that. I'm not like, I can understand where if you just read it and thought, so you're telling me this guy gets to, like, literally destroy this tree and the tree should be happy about it because her job was to take care of this guy, that could be a very negative reading of it.
Sure.
I don't know that there's, it's like a lot of art, right? There are lots of ways you could look at it.
Yeah, I should note, I have not read this book since I was a child. And I also have not read any of these commentary analysis pieces. So
I mean,
I've seen people rewrite it.
Mm. Yeah, which I think is a little disrespectful. Like, you can have however you feel about it, but, like, you know, I don't think mm-hmm. it's harmful. That's a bit of a stretch.
Yeah.
And I mean, I don't know. Yeah. Like, it seems like the tree is happy to have this relationship, but this is, you know, the tree seems to get just as much joy out of giving as you know, the boy is receiving, which I don't know. Like, I don't know if there's a big lesson, but I think that it's not bad.
Well, yeah. And to be frank, like, I would say that there is more joy in giving than receiving. Personally, that's my personal opinion that I put just on myself out there into the world. But I do think if everybody had a little bit better understanding that you can also get joy from giving.
Yes.
You can receive, please do. No one should not receive, but also giving is important. Mm-hmm. Maybe things wouldn't be so screwed up. maybe if we all valued giving just a little bit more and sacrificing and making decisions while thinking about everyone else.
Well,
just saying.
I think that was a consistent theme in his work, though, right? I always like that little one, the how many, how much, you know? How much good inside a day depends how good you live them. How much love inside a friend depends how much you give them. Like, mm-hmm. something like, you know, something he was concerned with, that giving begets getting.
Yes, I think that those are important lessons, and it's nuanced. But again, I think what you said, Tay, is true. Kids can handle complexity and nuance, not maybe at every age, and not alone. Like, they need help with that. But if you expose them to complexity and nuance, and then help guide them through that, and let them think through it and figure things out, they're going to be better their whole lives at figuring out complexity and nuance. It doesn't have to just be, and the moral of the story is always be kind. Good job, everybody.
Well, because like when I read The Giving Tree, it makes me think of everyone in my life that has supported me and given to me, perhaps that I haven't appreciated enough. You know, I think we spend so much of our life trying to get the approval and love from people that don't give it so easily, that the people that give it easily we take for granted. And it makes me think about that. And if a kid thinks about that and goes, oh, who don't I appreciate? I'm sad for the tree at the end of this book. Who have been the trees in my life? I think that's, you know, yeah, like you said, like there's more thinking. It's better if you think about it than you're just like taught a lesson and like, okay, I've learned it. I'm good.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Which is why next up, I'm going to have my kids read Uncle Shelby's ABC book.
Well, I don't think you should arm Cooper with that.
Yeah.
No.
You're going to end up with eggs on the ceiling and Daddy's going to get a haircut.
She'd give Charlie nightmares, taunting her with the idea of Stanley.
Yeah.
No doubt. No. Well, I don't want to give her any ideas that she could be Stanley.
Oh, no.
I don't do that. I don't think we're completely out of the woods with that yet.
Well.
Well, thank you both. Shel Silverstein's work means a lot to me personally, and sharing it with my children has been really important to me, and being able to talk about it with both of you and with all our listeners is really special. So thank you.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you.
Tay, what's next?
Not quite as sentimental, but very, very visually impactful on me. I want to talk about one of my favorite short anime series, Furikuri, or FLCL. It came out, I believe, in 2000, but it's a 6-episode series. There are newer iterations of it, but I really just want to talk about the one that made a big impact on me. So,
all right,
fun little story.
And it's on,
I believe Hulu? It is on Hulu. It's definitely on Hulu, but I'm sure it's available also on other streaming sites. I think Amazon has it. I think probably Crunchyroll has it, but definitely Hulu.
Is it subbed?
There is a dub. Okay. It has been dubbed, so I'm going to guess there's sub and dub options.
Justin cool. will want to watch the sub with me and then pause it every 30 seconds to see if he can figure out what they just said without looking at the subtitles.
Oh, I was going to say, the voice acting is good, both however you watch it, but the voice acting in the original is really, really good.
Cool. Awesome. All right. Well, that's next week. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah.
And listeners, thank you. Thank you for joining us. You should, if you have not read Shel Silverstein's books, A Light in the Attic and Where the Sidewalk Ends are great places to start. And all those, him reading them, it's all on YouTube. If you just look up those titles, you can find the like compilations of what was on the cassette back in the day. I'd highly recommend them. And thank you to Maximum Fun. You should go to MaximumFun.org and listen to all the great podcasts there. You can email us at StillBuffering@MaximumFun.org, and you can tweet at us at StillBuff. And thank you to the Novellas for our theme song, Baby, Change Your Mind.
This has been your cross-generational guide to the culture that made us. I am Riley Smurl.
I'm Sydney McElroy.
And I'm Taylor Smurl.
I am Still Buffering.
And I am too.
This is McTwitter.
I feel
the babysitter.
She's a little bit crazy. She thinks the babysitter is supposed to sit upon the baby.
Cooper loves that one, and it freaks Charlie out.
She does.
It freaks Charlie out so much.
We have wasted this world. Our magic put a storm in the sky that has rendered the surface of our planet uninhabitable. But beneath the surface, well, that's another story entirely. In a city built leagues below the apocalypse, survivors of the storm forge paths through a strange new world. Some seek salvation for their homeland above. Others seek to chart the vast undersea expanse outside the city's walls. And others still seek, what else? Fortune and glory. Dive into the Aethersea, the latest campaign from the Adventure Zone, every other Thursday on MaximumFun.org or wherever you listen to podcasts.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Audience supported.